This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown as we head towards the close of 2016. Can't believe that we're just about to see in a brand new year. And boy, what a year 2016's been. We're not even going to talk about the political changes and things that have been happening around the world. But let's hope 2017 is a little bit less eventful, should I say. And 2016, I think a lot of people are glad to see the back of it. But it's been a great year for us here at the Kona Edge. We've seen incredible growth, and that's all because of you. And just the love for triathlon that you have. And I just want to say thank you to you for downloading and listening to this podcast and me yakking on over the last year. It's been a phenomenal journey, and I can't wait to share some of the things that we've got up our sleeve for 2017. But I'll reveal some of that early in the new year. Also, I ask for it a lot, and if you haven't yet, I'd really appreciate it if you do. But if you haven't left us a review on iTunes, please. It's one of the ways you can help us in return for creating this content. It literally only takes a few minutes of your time and helps us get in front of more triathletes just like you, because iTunes rates us by the amount of positive reviews we have. And obviously, the more we get, the better it is for those algorithms. And if you wouldn't mind just taking a few minutes of your time in doing that, I'd appreciate it hugely. So let's get straight into today's podcast. And I get to share, I say it all the time, I get to share some incredible athletes. And this guy is a great athlete, but he's also a great guy as well. And I can't wait to share his story. So please welcome onto the Kona Edge today, Steve Day. Steve, welcome onto the Kona Edge.
Pleasure.
Steve, we just were chatting off air, and you, I saw when we booked the appointment that you live in New York, so I was just presuming that you were American, but you don't have an American accent. You're British originally. You've been living in the Big Apple for close on 7 years now. It's you don't associate, or I don't associate, a city like New York with triathlon, but there's a pretty strong triathlon scene there, isn't there?
That's right, Brad. I came originally from Yorkshire via London, and then arrived in the US in 2009. But you're right, there's a very vibrant tri scene. There's probably, just top of my head, there's probably five or six pretty good, pretty large, pretty competitive and social tri scene. So the scene's pretty good. Everyone knows everyone, to be honest.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good place to train, to be honest.
I love that. And you would think, for someone who doesn't, me personally, I don't live in I live in Cape Town, which is probably a big city, but I live in the suburbs and we've got amazing places to train. But I think for a lot of people, they think big city like in New York, and they think, gee, that must be terrible. There's nowhere to train. But I guess it's what you make of it.
Yeah, I say it's pretty good. The if you can get into the park in the morning, it's, as we're saying offline, it's pretty busy. And then on the weekends, you can go up over George Washington Bridge, and there's some very good cycling, very busy kind of cycle routes of the 9W. So it's surprisingly good. The swim is less so good. It's not easy to get pool time. That's probably the most challenging piece of trying to train in the city. But the biking and the running is pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a very big running scene in New York.
Yeah, there are just so many running teams just kind of based around the park, kind of virtual teams, really, and some pretty big ones. And it's very, very competitive. We have a lot of East Africans that live up in Westchester and up in the Bronx. So, yeah, we have a lot of, you know, the 10Ks in the park are won in the, you know, 28, 29 minutes. So.
Wow.
Very, very quick. Very quick indeed.
And let's not forget, there's that little marathon that happens once a year in November too.
Indeed, yeah. Now, the running scene is I mean, the tri scene is pretty good, but the running scene is exceptional for sure.
You're originally a runner. You didn't start out as a triathlete. When you moved to the Big Apple, were you out and out a runner and only took up triathlon then, or was triathlon on your radar before you moved to New York?
Not really. I was trying to think because we were chatting offline, I think 09, I think I did a sprint with my wife out in Montauk, which is on Long Island. But yeah, I was predominantly a runner. I wasn't really training particularly hard. Kind of was getting a little bored with it, and I just picked up a lot of injuries, which is why I started, before I moved over, I started doing a little bit of mountain biking, because I had an Achilles and plantar fasciitis combination for at least two and a half years. So that kind of took me out running for a while. So I was looking for something new, and try seemed interesting. So that just kind of, you know, happened to you know, fall into that scene.
We'll dig into that in a bit more detail now. But as a runner, were you any good? Were you pretty competitive?
Yeah, I was pretty good. You know, I was just sub 15 for 5K on the track, so I was pretty decent. I wasn't really a distance runner. My preference kind of 800 and 1500. So I trained with some very, very good runners when I was younger. So, you know, I ran for the county. I think I did about 3:55 for 1500. So, I was pretty decent. But there were certainly people quicker than I was, for sure.
It's a big step up from a 1500 to an Ironman. I mean, those are sort of almost total opposite ends of the scale.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I as I say, I think in 09, I did a sprint. In 010, I thought, well, you know, this is fun. So I think I did a sprint, an Olympic, and a half in the same year. There's no way I would even at that point contemplated doing an Ironman. I just thought it was a stupid distance, to be honest. No interest whatsoever. And then 2012, I did 11 and 12. I did a few more halves, and then took the plunge to do Lake Placid in 2013.
You talk about it being a stupid distance, and for a lot of us, we go into this thing where I think ignorance is bliss, where you go, oh, that looks good, and you pay the registration fee. You don't actually really think about what you're doing. I was like it. I'd never done a triathlon before I'd entered an Ironman. And for you, obviously, it was the other way around. You built up slowly too. Do you think that's the better way to go, or is sometimes just jump in and see how you go?
I've coached a few people, and my advice has always been, don't jump into Ironman. Just build up, get a feel for the sport, you know, learn the technical aspects of it, and then just slowly build up. So I certainly wouldn't recommend what you did, Brad, that's for sure.
There's a fine line between bravery and stupidity.
Very fine, yes. Sure.
So, I've definitely crossed it a few times, I can tell you that much. Steve, for you, I mean, Having that slowish build up, do you think where you said you came from a running background where you're getting quite bored, do you think that's really sort of sparked your interest in the sport and slowly introduced you to it over time?
Yeah, definitely. I hindsight's great, and I really wish I'd found triathlon at a much younger age. You know, I still love running. I think it's probably still my favorite sport. You know, I just, you know, it's just so simple. You can throw in a pair of sneakers and trainers and, you know, just head out the door. So just in terms of simplicity, I think it's great. You know, in terms of watching the sport, I still love to watch athletics and track and field. But you know, after a while, it just, you know, becomes same old. So I was just looking to do something new, and I just love all the technical aspects of the of triathlon and the data and the equipment. I was one of those that said, you know, I'll never fall into the track of buying the next gadget, but of course, pretty quickly you do. So I'm just fascinated by it. I'm a big student of the sport, albeit a little late to the party.
What's the one gadget that you think has just absolutely revolutionized what you do?
Yeah, sure. The power meter, which I bought in 13, was the one gadget which added a different dimension to my training, for sure. Before, I'd gone with the heart rate and perceived exertion, but in 13 I took the plunge and bought the power meter. It just kind of really focused the training. I spent a lot of time on the trainer, and it just means provided you do the training that's been set. There's no wasted time. But ultimately on race day, I think it pays real dividends. It's kind of cheating, really. just being able to watch that number and keep a balanced effort and flatten that course, as they say, I think is super helpful, particularly on a hillier course. And all of my Ironmans so far have been pretty hilly, so definitely the power meter for me.
Do you reckon anyone who's half serious about the sport should get one?
I think ultimately my advice would be yes. Certainly if you're new to the sport, I'd probably say no. I think dialing in your sense of perceived exertion and just understanding heart rate is probably more important. I mean, ultimately on race day, you're using all three for sure. So I'd say for a beginner, probably not, but for someone who's more experienced and looking to really compete, then absolutely. They're not cheap, but certainly a worthwhile investment for sure.
You make a very important point there too about the perceived exertion. And that's one thing a lot of triathletes, when they first start out, if they do get caught up in all the gadgetry and the power meters, and they almost forget what it feels like from a natural perspective within your body. And that's sometimes, I mean, you really do want to learn that, because there will be times where your gear might fail you on race day. And if you don't know how you're feeling, you're almost dead in the water, essentially.
Yeah. I've done that myself as well. You know, you have a number in your head and you stick to that number when actually your body's telling you something else. And if your body's telling you something else, then it's time to reduce the power and reduce the speed for sure. Cause, you know, particularly on give you an example on a hot day, you're just not going to hit the same power numbers. So if you go in thinking that, you know, X watts is where you need to be, but it's super hot and windy, like Kona, you're going to be walking. So I think just understanding all three, particularly the perceived exertion and the heart rate, and using power is where you should ultimately be.
For you, I mean, numbers wise, what are you chasing now? What are you sort of really pushing towards? What are the goals?
You mean in terms of my, what do I ride on an Ironman?
Or? Yeah, pretty much power output that you would be sort of pushing the numbers you're pushing in training as hard as you can, and then obviously the goal on race day.
Yeah, I took on a new coach this year, and we never tested for FTP, functional power. We just never did it. He's experienced enough to be able to. I guess just look at the numbers and look at the training that he sets me and be guided by that. That said, come race day, you know, at Lake Placid, my goal was 230 watts. And at Kona, my goal was 220 watts. Again, just factoring that additional heat, and wind, and just the general conditions. So I'm not the heaviest, so, you know, I'm weighing around 156 or, you know, 70 kilograms on race day. But yeah, they're the numbers that I go with.
Steve, in the last year, what's been your biggest struggle? What's been your biggest sort of obstacle that you've had to overcome?
I think consistency. So I probably peaked a little bit too soon in 13. So my first Ironman, I qualified for Kona and went in the first year. Then I had just two bad years. 14, I DNF'd and, you know, didn't finish at Placid with hypothermia. And I just seemed to have no consistency at all. And that followed into 15, where I perhaps overtrained a little bit. Again, had no consistency, had a lot of hip tightness and injuries to contend with. So 16, I just wanted to be healthy and just discover some consistency. And that's what my new coach brought me, to be honest. You know, day in, day out, nothing crazy, crazy hard. Not many rest days, actually, or just complete rest days, but a lot of easier sessions just kind of built into an ongoing schedule. So that was my biggest goal, to be honest, just to be consistent. And ultimately that pays dividends at the end.
Consistency is really underrated, isn't it? I'm sitting in the same boat at the moment where all of a sudden I've had 2 months where I've been running consistently, and it's just amazing what that actually does. And like you say, it's not necessarily pushing hard or doing massive volume. It's just doing it, and you end up building on that. It's incredible what can happen.
Yeah, it's huge. I don't do crazy hours at all. Over the winter, I was probably averaging maybe 11, 12 hours a week. And then in the summer, even in the biggest weeks, I don't think I did any more than kind of 17 hours, which actually sounds a lot, but it's not compared to what other people do. But it was day in, day out. I was one of those guys, particularly as, I'm 46 at the end of this month, where it was kind of drilled into me that, I needed to take a day off every week, and every fourth week would be recovery week. And my coach just had a completely different approach to that. He just built in easier recovery sessions within my overall training schedule. And I literally barely missed a day the whole of 16 that wasn't planned. And particularly on the running, coming from a running background, I was a little perhaps arrogant, thinking no one can tell me anything about running. And he just kept it so simple. We probably ran 5-6 days every week, just day in, day out, nothing crazy, lots of steady zone two and then some tempo work. It was just really simple, but just a lot of shorter, more frequent running. And that was a huge improvement for me in 2016. I always felt that I underran, particularly on long course before, given my pretty decent running background. But I think just finding that consistency helped me bring that out on race day.
Steve, you talk about those 2 years where you struggled and the inconsistency there. What brought about that inconsistency? Was it injury? Was it illness?
I think it was injury basically, and a bit of illness as well. Just not recovering, really. I wouldn't say I was really overtrained, but I was more under recovered. And my tendency is just to go hard. And I think that goes back to my track running days, I think, where we just went hard all the time. And I still enjoy going really hard, either running or biking. So my coach saved me from myself, really, and just slowed me down, so the easier days were easier, as opposed to getting in that, that gray zone three, neither here or there pace, when you don't recover, but there's no adaptation either. So consistency is huge. Far better be consistent all year than not do a lot over the winter and then just have some massive months. I think certainly for me, that kind of more level approach was far more beneficial.
I could not agree more. And you're the first person that I've spoken to that's really articulated the under recovery as opposed to overtraining. And I think that's something a lot of triathletes miss. And I'm guilty of that, because I had that exact thing happen to me this year where it was because of injury. And it's almost, once you've done a few of these things, you become mentally a lot tougher, that you don't almost have to do as much training to do one of these things because you're mentally there. But what that does is it pushes your body beyond where it's ready, and then it breaks down again, or you get sick, and it's just stop start, and before you know it, it's race day, and you're not getting the results you want. But that's exactly why.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not inhuman. I did get sick, but it would be the odd cold, and it would last for a day, and then I'd be back on it. Whereas before, I would have probably just pushed through it and just said, I've got a cold, but it's not in my legs. Instead of doing 12 mile, I'll run 8 mile instead. Whereas at the first sign of illness now, my coach is, you're doing nothing for 2 days. And I listen to him, and I have huge respect for what he says. I feel quite accountable to him. So, I listen to his advice to take the 2 days off, and then I'm straight back on it, 2 days later.
Yeah, and the truth of the matter is, you're not going to lose any fitness in 2 days. It's long term, you're better off taking those 2 days off.
Exactly, and it doesn't stop me sat there you know, basically feeling quite frustrated and thinking, well, you know, everyone else is training. I should be training. And particularly if you know, within those 2 days, you're meant to have a pretty big set. But again, you know, my coach always points out, you know, just go back to your training diary, look at what you've done, look at that consistency. And as I say, the end of the day, 2016, for me, was just incredibly strong as a result of that.
Yep. And that's, funnily enough, I mean, we've been doing this podcast for just over a year now, and that's the one thing that comes up time and time and time again is consistency trumps all. So I'm glad we're getting it from you too. One thing you just said to me a short while ago too is that you wish you had got into the sport sooner. Tell me a little bit about the thinking about that. Do you think you could have performed better? You could have done more? What's the reasoning for that statement?
Yeah, I mean, you always wonder how good you could have been. You know, I'm 45, 46 now, so the battle is not to slow down, rather than, you know, keep improving. Though I do, you know, what's great about sport is that you can keep improving. I think the older you get, you just keep banking that endurance. You know, I was a track runner, it's still an endurance sport. And I've been doing that since I was 9 years old. So I've got a huge base in there. You always wonder how good you could have been. I don't recover anywhere near as well as what I used to be able to, you know, when I was running a lot. So, you know, had I been doing this in my late 20s and 30s, you know, it's just a question of, you know, how good could I have been? You know, I was effectively an adult onset swimmer. My first triathlon, I think I did half of it in breaststroke and half of it in freestyle. So, you know, certainly those years could have been spent learning how to swim properly. They're the reasons why, you know, I wish I'd started earlier, and just because I love the sport more than anything.
What's been your biggest achievement? What are you most proud of in your triathlon career?
Probably my two Ironmans in 16, actually. I would say, like, you know, qualifying at Lake Placid. I won my age group, I think, by about 20 minutes, and I was six overall. And then going to Kona this year, you know, I used the phrase before, it was kind of my best worst race. I felt awful from mile 80 on the bike onwards. I just felt awful. I wanted to quit 5,000 times. But you just keep going. And I just kind of proved that mentally I can just keep doing that. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I think that's probably what I'm most proud of.
Let's talk about digging ourselves out of those holes, because everyone goes through patches on race day where they they question their sanity and they ask themselves, why am I here? And by the sounds of it, you had a few of those moments on the Big Island in 2016. What do you do to dig yourself out of a place like that where your mind is just going, you know what, I don't want to do this. This sucks and I want to go home.
I guess two things. One is I'm very competitive as far as sport is concerned. So I don't like to lose. I'd set myself a goal of finishing top 10 in my age group. I didn't know whether I was top 10, but that kind of drove me on. In the moment and how I force myself, I find a lot of people like the more positive mantras, you know, of looking back at all the training you've done and, you know, the self-talk, the, you know, you can do it. Where I go the opposite way. I quite like to self, this is going to sound a little strange, but I like the self-abuse, you know, having a word with yourself, you know, man up, that type of thing, perhaps with some more colorful language. But that's kind of the way I go really on race day.
That's awesome. As far as sort of making the step up to a full Ironman, You mentioned that's you built up slowly towards it. Was it daunting once you had done a couple of halves? Was it still as daunting as it is for most of us, or had you done the work and went, you know what, I'm ready. Now's the time. I'm going to do this thing.
Yeah, I wasn't really nervous about it, to be honest. When I think back, there are a few of us. We all signed up at the same time, so I think that really helped as well. So we'd done a lot of the long rides together. So I was confident of competing. I had no idea how I would do. I had a time in my mind. You know, Lake Placid is a is a slow course, but I still thought, well, you know, maybe I can do this on the swim, I can do this on the bike, and maybe I can do this on the run. But I wasn't really nervous, to be honest. I think as long as you've put in some, you know, 5 or 6 big weeks, then, you know, as long as you execute on the day and you don't do anything stupid, then, you know, I wasn't particularly nervous, to be honest.
Did you go into that first one hoping to qualify for Kona, or was the goal just not to die?
Well, you know, obviously not to die, but I'd thought about it, but what was obviously immediately aware to me when I started to talk to people that were very good athletes is that the step up is really big from a half to a full, because it's not about necessarily fitness. Well, it is about fitness, but there are so many other things you have to get right. You know, you have to get your pacing nailed down. You have to really nail down your nutrition as well. You need a bit of luck. And, you know, I think that's the big difference when you make the move, when you make the move up. So I kind of thought, well, you know, if I do all of those things, then maybe I'll grab a spot. And as it happened, I took the very last spot. So I was, you know, a bit of luck, as it were. But yeah, I was very, very excited to do it first time around. That's for sure.
It's interesting you say that too, where you talk about the step up from a half to a full, and it's speed isn't the limiting factor. It's like you say, it's a whole bunch of other things, and it's been able to string that together. It's, in golf, they call it course management, and knowing exactly how it all pieces together. That is the key to being good at this thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Patience is king for sure, and. When I was out on the course this year in Lake Placid, I remember going around the second lap, and there was this guy. I'd say he was, maybe in his 20s. And I saw this guy absolutely hammering one of the hills, and I just said to him, "Look, just be patient. Just kind of slow down and do yourself some favors." He just completely ignored me, and you know I saw him walk in the first loop of the run course. So you just got to be so patient in an Ironman. It's got to feel pretty easy on the bike. At any time that you feel like you're working really hard on the bike, then you've just got to slow down. And it takes time to learn that, for sure. And it's just very different to a half where you feel like you're working all the time.
Yep. What's been the biggest life lesson Ironman's taught you?
Not sure I've thought about it so deeply, but probably, you know, patience and hard work pays off. You know, if you want to draw comparisons with life in general, I'd say, yeah, patience and hard work. And, you know, ultimately, if you work hard and you're consistent and you're patient, then the reward will be there.
Let's talk about life in general and getting that balance right and the juggle and coping with that juggle of work and family and getting the training. And you said that you're not the biggest of mileage and hours type of guy, but you still need to do the work in order to compete. So how do you get that balance right? What's the key and the secret to it?
I'm pretty lucky. I work from home a lot. So I moved over with my, so I work as a tax in an accounting firm. So I work from home a lot. So that means I can train in the morning, work all day, get my head down. But then finish relatively early. You know, I'm not wasting 2 hours a day commuting. Those are the 2 hours that I'll go out and train. So I'm very lucky, with that. We're married, but have no children. So again, we don't have that burden either. And my wife is not only understanding, but she's also, you know, a pretty, pretty fine sportswoman as well and very interested in the sport. So she's very supportive. But at the same time, you know, I do want to have, I'm not one of these people that just want to train and do nothing. We're you know, with a healthy and active social life as well, and a lot of friends. So I do like to get that balance, which is why I don't want to do the crazy hours. I don't want to do 25 hours a week. I don't want to be wrecked, you know, every week from training. So I'm able to find the balance because, you know, I work from home most of the time. I have to travel from time to time, but, you know, largely I'm home based. And I've got a very supportive wife as well.
Brilliant. Steve, what do you still want to achieve in the sport?
I just want to keep improving, to be honest. As I said, you know, if I was younger, I'd have, you know, perhaps bigger goals. But I say ultimately, you know, the clock is ticking, as it were. I want to work on my swim, because relatively my swim is still pretty crap, to be honest. I think I've more to do, more to come on the bike. My run's still pretty strong. I want to run a really quick Ironman marathon. I'd like to get close to 3 hours on a flatter course, if I could. So I don't, they're my goals really, just to keep on improving. Times, I'm kind of less bothered by times, other than I'd like to get close to 3 hours on the Ironman marathon. I want to go back to Kona. I'm certainly not going back in 2017. I'm taking a decision. I'm not, if I do an Ironman, I'm going to do one late enough that, you know, it qualifies for 2018. And, you know, if I go to Kona, then I'd like to go top 10.
I guess that's one of the positives and one of the negatives of the sport, is there's always room for improvement, isn't there? You never quite have the perfect race.
Absolutely. I think Plastid was probably as there was nothing in that race that I think I could have done better. I could probably have gone a little quicker on the run. I was pretty conservative towards the end at aid stations, etc. But that was a very, very good race for me. I consider, as far as Kona is concerned, I'm pretty sure I can go quicker and finish stronger. And I learned a lot this year for sure.
If you could go back and start your career over, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently? What would you tell yourself to do?
I'd probably invest a little more time in my swim. I would have taken on a coach much earlier. And I'm still, you know, I've only been doing the sport for 6 years, so it's hardly a long career. But I think I would have taken a coach much earlier in my career for sure. Someone that can then guide me. I think because I came from a sporting background, I made the mistake of thinking, well, you know, I'll just replicate what I did with my running training. I'll do the same on swimming, you know, for swimming and biking. It just doesn't work that way at all. You've got to be able to find a balance between the three sports. Swimming is super technical. You know, I could swim four times a day. it probably wouldn't add that much until I take the time out and work on that technique. Biking probably has a few comparisons. I think the more you bike, the stronger you'll get. But definitely, I think a coach for sure.
Brilliant. Well, I think that's a great place to leave it. I look forward to getting you back on to chat a little bit about your swim, but we'll save that for another day. Thanks for your time today, Steve.
Good. All right. Cheers, Brad.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.